back here in Minnesota, 1976, looks like you started a band called Highway 52.
Yes, I started playing at a racket club in Cannon Falls off of Highway 52, and I just kind of had a band evolving. Michael Yonkers would play, and then I would play, and kind of evolved over the months.
And it evolves into full-time players, and who's in the full-time band?
That would be Jim Steinworth, keyboards.
Keyboards, okay.
Greg Kubera on bass, Mark Partridge on guitar, Hans Gasterlin on drums, and myself on lead vocals and guitar.
What about Dave Rummelhoff?
Dave Rummelhoff came in later.
That was later.
After we'd worked with Kevin Odegaard. David was part of Kevin's band at one time.
And Tim Rummelhoff?
That was, he kind of came right in with the Highway 52 band later on. So then we had a couple other drummers, and then we had Bobby Z.
Who was Bobby Rifkin?
Bobby Rifkin. And then after that, a guy named Jim Vasquez. And there were a couple other drummers after that, too.
What kind of music did Highway 52 play live?
I'd call it urban rock.
Original songs again?
Yeah, mostly original, maybe a handful of covers.
Written by you and Gary?
Just me.
Just you at this
point? Yeah, I was just writing the songs then.
Did you do Wild in the Streets?
Yeah, we did a handful of covers. Crowd Pleaser. Peter Gunn.
So you'd finish up every show with Wild in the Streets?
No, we'd finish up with, who knows? Big ending.
Okay, so did that band do any recording?
Yeah, we recorded 4 tracks at Sound 80 in early 1979. Previous to that, we'd recorded some demos at Cookhouse in 76, maybe 77.
Some Moonstone stuff.
Yeah, I did some Moonstone stuff, yeah.
Did any of the Highway 52 songs come out on vinyl?
No, never.
Okay. How long did the band last?
I'd say the band lasted from 76 to 80.
Okay. How did you like playing in a band instead of sitting in a studio and writing songs?
I loved it at the time. It was great. I came from there, so it was in my second nature to play in a band.
It's a little different than sitting in a studio and writing songs, right?
Yeah, I was like the leader of the band. It was not a democracy. I was the boss.
Do you still have the tape of the 4 songs recorded, completed?
I believe we just found them just recently.
Really?
Yeah.
Looking at my notes... In 1977, you and members of Highway 52 went into Moonsound and recorded a new version of your song, Rock and Roll Forever.
Yes, okay. That was the first version with me on guitar, lead vocals, Jim Steinworth keyboards, Greg Kubera bass, Mark Partridge guitar, Arnie Fogel on drums, and a guy named Dave Parker, on saxophone.
What happened with that recording?
That recording got to Steve Katz at Mercury Records. I got a call. I was working as a valet at Interlochen Country Club. And I got a call that Steve Katz wanted me to go to New York and... write songs just record some of my songs in New York.
Was there ever a deal with Mercury Records to put out an album or?
No deal. I just wound up doing, 4 plus 12, 16 demos for Mercury.
Is that when you came into contact with Lou Futterman?
Yes. I'd been in contact with him basically the whole, off and on the whole time since the batch.
What was his background? What did he do?
He had a publishing company. He was, his main form of business was, I'd say, real estate in Manhattan.
Like an investor?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he did the music thing on the side?
Well, I think he started off with the music thing as his main deal.
Oh, okay. Through Lou Futterman, you get a deal to do an album, correct?
Right, for his production company.
How did that play out? Where did you go to record the album? And
we went to Ann Arbor, Michigan, where Grand Funk recorded.
Really?
Yeah, at A Square Studios. I started recording my album. Then after we recorded 5 or 6 songs, I had to take a break because the two producers, one of them was the drummer for Ted Nugent, so I took a break for 5 months as they went on the road.
Oh. So then you returned?
I returned later in 1980. It started in the spring of 1980. And I returned in like the autumn of 1980. And then through 80, 81, I recorded this album.
Do you have any idea how much the album cost to record?
Lots of money.
100 grand?
I think so.
That's the number I have.
Yeah.
So in 1983, the record comes out, but it has your picture on the front, but it has the name Ben Gold.
Right. Well, the fact that there's another Barry Goldberg who kind of has the same time element of his career as I do, although he was from Chicago and a keyboard player, known mainly as a blues keyboard player.
With the Electric Flag.
Electric Flag. Yeah, I think Paul Butterfield or Mike Bloomfield? He played with, one of those guys. So just... you know, I was going by the name of Barry T. Goldberg. I tried that. And then when I finally had to put out my album, I just decided to go for a new name, and I went with Ben Gold because I thought it was my grandfather's name.
Turned out not to be so?
You know, I just can't verify it, you know.
So where's this cover picture taken?
I believe that's taken in Minneapolis across the river.
So the record comes out in 83, correct?
Right.
What happens with the album?
It was played on KQ. I did a couple interviews with KQ. I might have been on the radio. It was played a few times. Some of the cuts were played a few times on the radio.
Now, this says HIJ Records with the address of 476 Zenwood,
mm-hmm.
Minneapolis. Whose label is that?
That's just my label. It was self-released.
Okay, so there's also a 45 that comes out as Ben Gold, and it looks like the A side is Prince of the City.
Right.
And the B side is Love is the Law. Was this before or after the album?
That was after the album.
After the album.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the story on Love is the Law? Because there's a song by the Suburbs with that same title.
Well, the best I can figure it out, I kept on seeing graffiti on walls around Minneapolis that said, Love is the Law. I went, oh, what an interesting title. And I saw it all around Minneapolis. So I proceeded to write a song called Love is the Law. Now, it could have been that the Suburbs were writing Love is the Law as kind of a street team kind of a deal, just to promote their song coming out. It could be that, which sounds like a pretty good guess to me. But I had no idea that Love is the Law was a suburb song, and they both came out about the same time, which is kind of ironic. But that was recorded in 1982. I believe that came out before the album.
Oh, you think the 45 came out?
I do.
Before the album?
I do.
But the album was 83, right?
Yeah, the album was dead. I mean, I had turned down publishing. Lou Futterman had turned down record companies. The album was basically in limbo.
And the reason you turned down publishing and he turned down record deals
because
was?
I wanted to own my own songs.
Okay.
And that was it.
Okay.
I wouldn't sell out my songs.
Do you have any idea how many copies of this album are pressed up?
I have no idea.
Okay. All right. Did you play gigs as Ben Gold or not?
Just one run.
In Minneapolis?
Yeah, 3 or 4 nights at Williams Pub.
Okay, so after Ben Gold, comes along another album, also on HIJ Records, and this one is called Absolute Zero.
Right.
And this appears to be produced by William Wainer or
Wainer? No, Bill Wainer owned Williams Pub and also had a record company, mainly a jazz label. And he wanted to kind of spread his wings a little bit and get into rock. So we had a deal where he would put out the record on his jazz label. Eddie Berger was on his label, I believe, and a couple other people. But anyway, the label collapsed after I'd finished the album. So, again, I was left holding the bag with the album, and then I self-released that.
And do you have any idea how many copies of this album were pressed up?
I only printed up 100.
100?
Yeah.
So this is a rare record.
That's a rare record.
Okay, so you record this at Blackberry Way, correct?
Right.
And why don't you tell us who's playing on that album?
I'm playing, I'm doing lead vocals. Cliff Davies is on drums. Arnie Fogel is on keyboards and background vocals. Ed Brown is playing bass. Jim Prideaux is on guitar. And then I used a couple tracks from the 1980 album that I'd recorded to fill out the album.
Let's back up to Ben Gold and let's get the players on that Ben Gold album.
Yeah, the When the Night Comes album was me on lead vocals, and I played guitar a few times, uncredited. Danny Gore on guitar and background vocals. Dave Kiswini on bass and background vocals, John Thorpe on drums, and then I had background singers Leah Kilburn, Charlie Hune, Billy Bagnasco, and Cliff Davies. And that was produced by Cliff Davies and Rick Browdy.
So after this album, Absolute Zero, is that when you headed out to Los Angeles?
Yes, I actually headed out before the album, and I just kind of came back to record the album.
Mm-hmm. How long were you in the Los Angeles area?
From 85 to 88.
What'd you do out there?
Basically, I was going to acting school.
Acting school?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. With Stella Adler, who's a famous acting coach. And I was writing screenplays for an agent.
How did you like Los Angeles?
I didn't like it too much. It was a little bit same old weather all the time. I like the seasonal changes.
Now, at one point, you and Gary actually started writing country songs.
That would be in the 90s. We wanted to do some genuine type of country songs, like, you know, Hank Williams and Patsy Cline. And we.
Did you have a connection with somebody in Nashville, or how did that come about?
Yeah, my girlfriend knew, like, somebody who was with CAA, I believe. I might have the letters wrong, but
okay.
This guy booked Faith Hill, and also he had some connection with Leanne Rimes, so we wrote songs in that vein, because she had had a hit with Blue that was really Patsy Cline-ish, and we really liked it. So we were trying to write authentic kind of country songs for Leanne Rimes, and she never even got back to us. By the time our tape, our demo got to her, she already came out with a follow-up to Blue that was like patriotic songs. So we were not in the same league. Great hit, though.
Let's talk about your Ironweeds cassette tape. I'm curious about the title, Dr. Wormwood's Monkey Theater.
That was something that I read about, how Dr. Wormwood's Monkey Theater would travel around the country in their wagons and put on shows and try to tell the people what's in store for them, either biblically or entertainment-wise. They were just this traveling show.
After the Ironwoods, you start launching a series of CDs.
Right.
The very first one, Empire Moon.
Right.
Is there a theme to that CD?
Yeah, that's all up to 2002. You know, there was this build-up to a war in Iraq, and that was basically my reaction to 9/11.
So Empire Moon is followed by Cottonwood.
Right.
In 2004. Is there a theme to Cottonwood?
Yeah, the Cottonwood was meant to be like a big, expansive, epic album. It's like almost an hour long, I think, and it just was more about, it was more songs about the world than some acoustic songs and some electric jams.
Okay, and that one's followed by a 2005 release, American mm-hmm. Grotesque.
Right.
Did you say Speedy was on this?
Yeah, he is.
Which one is Speedy?
He's the guy in the white coat on the my right side, above the guy who looks like an undertaker. Those are freaks.
This guy here?
That's Speedy.
But he's not those a freak.
Those are all freaks.
But Speedy's not a freak.
No, he's the guy who sold stuff to the freaks.
Oh,
there's
okay.
A two-headed man in there. Actually, true. I used to go with him, and, you know, we'd sell stuff to the two-headed man and the bearded lady and all that stuff. It happened. But there's a two-headed man in there.
How about Popeyes, the guy who popped his
Yeah, head yeah, that's in Popeye Ice. That is in Popeye Ice.
Right.
Popeye, he's got Popeye eyes.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember that.
The alligator woman's in there, too. That's a picture of the alligator woman.
With alligator skin, huh?
Right. Which is basically just bad psoriasis, probably.